Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's program. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during our question-and-answer session. Please note this call is being recorded. I will be standing by should you need any assistance. It is now my pleasure to turn the conference over to Emma McKinnon. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Morning. Thanks for joining us on this call. This is the release of UC Berkeley's report, Guantanamo and its aftermath, U.S. detention and interrogation practices and their impact on former detainees, which is produced in partnership with the Center for Constitutional Rights. The first person we'll hear from today is Eric Stover at the UC Berkeley Human Rights Center. Eric's name again is Eric, E-R-I-C, Stover, S-T-O-V-E-R. He'll be followed by Laurel Fletcher, also at the UC Berkeley, but at the law school's International Human Rights Law Clinic. After Laurel, we'll hear from Vincent Warren at the Center for Constitutional Rights. Sorry, just to backtrack a little, Laurel's name is L-A-U-R-E-L, Fletcher, F-L-E-T-C-H-E-R. And Vincent is V-I-N-C-E-N-T, Warren, W-A-R-R-E-N. And with that, Eric, do you want to go ahead and get started?
My pleasure. Welcome, everyone. We're going to spend about 8 minutes, Laurel Fletcher and I will actually present the report and its findings. And just to get started, in our presentation, we're going to have three overarching findings from the study just to keep your eye on the bouncing ball. And the first is that we found in Afghanistan the process there of screening detainees who were taken into custody was really deeply flawed. And as a result, it appears that many detainees who were then sent to Guantanamo, and U.S. government officials are on the record on this, and Jane Meyer has published it in her book, had detainees going there who were not a security threat. The second is that at Guantanamo, we found that the interrogation methods there and the way they were detained for years on end created a cumulative effect. And this cumulative effect means the exposure to various interrogation techniques worked to really undermine the deterioration of the mental capacity of emotional problems that were exhibited on many former detainees. And thirdly, that this emerged in our interviews with the detainees once they were released and back in their home countries or a third country. We interviewed 62 former detainees in 9 countries, and on average, those detainees had spent 3 years in Guantanamo. The interviews were anonymous. That means they were confidential. We were not released their names, and that allowed them to speak openly about their own governments and how they had been treated, and we felt gave us candid responses. The second set of interviews were with 50 personnel who either worked at Guantanamo or involved in the detention system. This included guards, translators, interrogators, medical personnel, and 18 lawyers who had clients at Guantanamo, so we could open the window further and find out what was going on there. In the terms of the findings in Afghanistan, very quickly, we found that one-third of the respondents reported the use of bounties. That's how they were brought into custody there. And again, that there was a flawed screening process, so much pressure from Washington that detainees were being sent to Guantanamo and it wasn't done properly. And we also documented through the interviews some extreme physical abuse, which we can go into in further depth, forced nudity, desecration of the Quran were problems in particular there. In Guantanamo, the point we want to make here that we found from our study is that this Guantanamo served not only as a detention camp, but its main purpose was an interrogation center, and the camp system was established to have guards collaborating with interrogators, mental health personnel, really the sort of handmaidens of interrogators, were advising them, and the American Medical Association, the American Public Health Psychological Association, the American Psychiatric Association, World Medical Association, has all passed statements calling for psychologists and other medical personnel not to participate in interrogations. I'll just finally mention that what we saw in this cumulative effect of exposure to short shackling, prolonged solitary confinement, sexual humiliation, exposure to extreme cold, that these things happened over time repeatedly, and we raised the question, and this we believe should be investigated further, whether this cumulative effect in fact could in many cases arise to the level of torture as defined under international and domestic law.
This is Laurel Fletcher, and thank you for joining us this morning. Upon release, we found in our study that Guantanamo former detainees suffer three primary impacts. One is a Guantanamo stigma, two is economic loss, and three is psychological damage. And I'll talk about each of these briefly with a preview that, just to remind, I'm sure many of you already know, that there have been a total of 520 known detainees released from Guantanamo since the camp opened, and this represents over 65% of the total population. Those detainees in our study, when they return home, suffer from what we call a Guantanamo stigma, because although they've been released without ever having been convicted of a crime, they have not had a chance to clear their name. And in the public eye, they are associated with Guantanamo and presumed to be dangerous men. And as a result, many are shunned by their communities and even their families. The immediate economic impact of Guantanamo stigma means that it's very difficult for former detainees to find employment, which of course is essential to rebuilding their lives. Only 6 of the former 62 that we interviewed had permanent employment. The problems that this causes are fairly graphic. Many were unable to afford to send their kids to school. Families went into debt when their head of household was in detention. The head of household returns after years of detention and without a job is unable to repay that debt. Also, families can't afford, and men who are released can't afford, medications for psychological problems that they developed while they were in Guantanamo. Fully two-thirds of the detainees we interviewed report experiencing psychological problems that were due to their incarceration. And their reported symptoms include withdrawal from family members, irritability and outbursts of anger, as well as nightmares. So they spoke about the fact that Guantanamo isn't over for them, and they continue to struggle. I think it's important here to point out that we asked them about their attitudes towards the United States since their release. And while most of them expressed anger and disappointment at the United States, they distinguished between their attitude towards the United States government, which was negative, and the American people, against whom they held no grudge. And in fact, a few specifically wanted to thank those Americans who had advocated for their release. We feel that the findings here warrant a full and complete investigation and are therefore calling for an independent, nonpartisan commission that will take a thorough examination of U.S. detention and interrogation practices that have been established since 9/11, including Guantanamo, but broader than that, including other detention facilities. Closing Guantanamo, which there's been a lot in the news lately, is not enough. That we need this review in order to move on from this dark chapter in U.S. history. And a commission would be composed of independent experts drawn from law, medicine, retired military with an intelligence background. They should have subpoena power to compel the documents and testimony that they need to follow the evidence and follow the evidence wherever it leads and have the authority to recommend, if needed, criminal investigations that would go all the way up the chain of command where the evidence leads. We also strongly believe that outgoing President Bush should not issue any amnesties or pardons or in any way prevent any future accountability for what may be found to be criminal acts. And that part of what the commission should look at not only is investigating those U.S. officials who have maybe criminally culpable, but also consider how those who were falsely imprisoned can clear their name. And that this review will help turn the chapter on Guantanamo and begin to restore U.S. Prestige and rule of law at home and abroad. I'm going to now turn it over to Vince.
Thank you. To echo what Eric and Laurel said, closing Guantanamo is not enough. What this report brings home to us is that, first of all, in the voices and words of released detainees, this corroborates what we've been hearing and what you have all been uncovering with respect to the ill treatment and torture that people have experienced in both in Afghanistan and in Guantanamo. It also focuses on a very important aspect of the cumulative effect of the interrogation methods, and it can't be overstated that it would be wrong to focus just on isolated techniques and to determine as a legal or a policy matter as to whether they do or do not rise to the level of torture or not. But the broader, and I think the message here, is that when you put those techniques together over a period of time with isolation, you release people with no safety net to a world that thinks that they are still the worst of the worst, even though the information that this report uncovers and that you all have uncovered said that that is certainly not the case with respect to the vast majority of men, is tremendously, tremendously problematic. I think also this report provides us some guidance and provides the Obama administration some guidance as to how the Obama administration should handle Guantanamo. Clearly, closing down the facility is key, and that should happen immediately. The next phase is how do we begin the process of releasing the men that everyone acknowledges is no threat to the United States. What we've learned from this report is that the men in Guantanamo today are likely suffering from the same psychological, mental health, and physical health issues as the people that have been released. We also can expect that the men that the government will release will need a safety net, will need to be reintegrated into their families, and we need to deal with the aspect of what the cumulative effect of the torture interrogation has been for them. With respect to a larger political question, it is important that the Obama administration look to the findings in this report to help guide its policy on what the next steps are. We have an opportunity now with a new administration to engage in the world community with respect to releasing people to safety, not releasing them to countries that torture and countries that will leave them in indefinite detention. We have, as a policy matter, the ability and, in fact, the obligation to make sure that as we're thinking about new policies to put into effect specifically with respect to detention and torture and interrogation, that those new policies are designed to not violate, obviously, international and domestic law, but are designed to achieve the aims of interrogation, but in the confines of the law. Finally, the broad issue, I think, for the human rights community stemming from this report is how will the Obama administration address what clearly, at least to me as an advocate from publicly available information, seems to suggest that war crimes have been committed and serious criminal violations have been committed by the people that designed, that implemented, that authorized the torturous and inhumane techniques that are outlined in this report and in other reports. The magnitude of the Bush administration's interrogation policy needs to be matched by the magnitude of the Obama administration's mechanisms to fix it, which is why we call for an independent commission to look into these things, but leaving open the very important view that to the extent that crimes are uncovered, that there needs to be a mechanism to punish those crimes, that there needs to be a mechanism to make sure that the people who are going to be released from this point on are released to safety, that the government does not rely on specious diplomatic assurances, and that the people that have already been released, that we learn from this lesson, and we provide the support, the compensation, and the ability to have their names cleared so that this period in history will not be repeated by a future administration that is tempted to flout the law the way the last administration has. That's the end of my statement.
All right, I think we'll move now to questions.
Certainly. At this time, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star and one on your touchtone telephone. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing the pound key. Once again, to ask a question, please press star and one on your touchtone phone. Our first question comes from Amy Harder with National Journal of Medicine. Please go ahead.
Hello, thank you. I have a question regarding the, I understand that Obama hasn't named the specific people on his transition team to address Guantanamo Bay, but what do you propose should be the team's first step in addressing this issue?
Well,
this is for anybody.
I think the team's first step, I would, based on our report, is to appoint a commission, and that would create a very strong symbolic message to the American public and to the international community that the Obama administration is going to turn a new page in this in this dark chapter, and is willing to take a critical look at the last 8 years about what went wrong, as well as what went right. If they're to acknowledge those within agencies and within the military who tried to mitigate and tried to mitigate harm and do the right thing, but establishing a commission is this important first step because it will put into place a structure for the thorough review that needs to be done.
Thank you.
Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star and one on your touchtone phone now. Our next question comes from Bridget Kuhn with JAMA Medical News. Please go ahead.
Hi. Do you have any specific recommendations for how to prevent or to discourage medical personnel from participating in these in techniques that are torturous or that might be contrary to their role as not doing harm, I guess?
Hello, this is Eric Stover speaking. There's a range here. First of all, it has to begin with the professional associations,
mm-hmm.
The American Medical Association and others. And the first step has been these statements, and that is which are unequivocal, that they do not want members of their associations to be participating in interrogations and even working with interrogators to plan interrogations. But, you know, that's a statement of conduct.
Mm-hmm.
Now there needs to be within these associations a monitoring body which watches over and monitors what's going on. You know, this problem has existed in Chile. We had it in the Soviet Union with forced psychiatric confinement in Chile, in Uruguay, in Argentina, a number of countries in South Africa and so on. And I don't think any of us would have believed that we would be dealing with this today. So the professional associations need to be proactive. They need to monitor and discipline those who do participate, because if they don't, what lies ahead is very likely could be criminal prosecutions if a commission or other channels decide that they should be pursued.
Thank you.
We'll take our next question from Bob Gelko with the San Francisco Chronicle. Please go ahead.
Did you get the sense in either talking to the people who had been released or the people who worked there, I guess number one, whether the interrogations that took place in Guantanamo of people who in many cases didn't constitute any threats or in some other cases used questionable techniques, whether they, I guess, were effective, whether they were productive, and number two, particularly from the people who had been released, was there any sense of I guess, what, you know, why people were released, you know, whether it was just arbitrary or whether it seemed like they were released when they'd been interrogated enough or when people realized that they shouldn't be there in the first place? I guess I've heard from others and from lawyers that they seem to be released at times that made, you know, no sense at all. And I was wondering if you got any sense of any you know, reasoning or pattern in their releases.
This is Eric Stover speaking. On the question of productive, that we can't say exactly. What, you know, was interesting in our interviews is many of these former detainees said they were flabbergasted by the fact that they would be interrogated with one interrogation team for weeks on end, and then all of a sudden a new interrogation team would come in and start all over again asking the questions. And this seemed to indicate that they were on a fishing trip. They were looking for information that may not have been there. One of the things you have to keep in mind when talking about interrogation is that getting someone to talk versus getting someone to provide you with valid information are two very different things. And the U.S. Army manual of 1992 for interrogators points out that, in fact, many people interrogators, military interrogators, are going to question actually have no information at all. And it's a very common case. So we had, and interestingly enough, when we asked the former detainees, the 62, how many had difficulties or how would they characterize their interrogations at Guantanamo, 24 of the 55 who spoke about it said they actually had no problems at all. 31, well over half, characterized their interrogations as abusive. And so we learn from this statement that some of those, and many of those detainees who didn't have problems, said their interrogators told them they didn't know why they were there. And indeed, the government itself recognized Major General Michael Dunleavy when he traveled to Afghanistan. He was the commander of Guantanamo in 2002. He went to Afghanistan, and he went to Kandahar and Bagram, the two U.S. detention centers, and he complained that there were too many Mickey Mouse detainees, as he characterized it, being sent to him in Guantanamo. So we can only wonder that in terms of the productiveness of this, that at least in our group, and we think it's representative of a larger sample, was there probably wasn't that much that was really being gained from this. But again, we are looking at a small sample. We need to have a independent commission to be able to go and travel to countries, interview more detainees, make this a larger sample, and then we could have more answers to that question.
As for the rhyme or reason of releases?
This is Laurel Fletcher. On the rhyme or reason of releases, I think that's a good point. The first thing to remind everyone is that the former detainees that we interviewed, many but not all, has gone through the Combat Status Review Tribunal proceeding. Some were released prior to the establishment of that, but most had gone through it. Those proceedings were ostensibly designed to determine whether or not they fell into the illegal enemy combatant status and could be detained. In practice, what we learned from detainees is that the detainees had virtually no idea what this status hearing was about. They thought they had lawyers. They didn't have lawyers. Some of them, you know, tried to bring evidence. They weren't allowed to bring evidence to defend themselves. But what was common were delays. delays between the date of the hearing and when they got notice of the result, so that we had detainees who were kept in Guantanamo for sometimes up to 18 months, then one day were delivered a piece of paper saying that they had been cleared by the review tribunal and then were put on a plane and sent home. On the other hand, the U.S. government says that its process for reviewing and determining whether detainees should be transferred from the base is independent of the Combat Status Review Tribunal and the Annual Review Board process. What that means is a detainee could be cleared for release by the tribunals or the annual review boards and still not be determined to be a low enough risk to be transferred off the base. Conversely, you could have people who were found to not be eligible from the status review boards, and nevertheless, the Department of Defense could determine that they could be transferred. What that means that that our study shows it was an arbitrary system, and former detainees experienced it as arbitrary, and they had no idea up until really about, for some cases, 72 hours, some at most maybe a week or 10 days, that they were actually going to be released. And many talked about when they heard that they were going to be released, simply didn't believe it.
Our next question comes from the side of Carol Rosenberg with the Miami Herald. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. This Truth and Reconciliation Commission you're proposing, have you kicked around any names of who you'd like to run it? People who might be able to rise to the task of this thing?
This is Eric Stover speaking. No, we haven't. We feel that that should be the prerogative of the new administration, and particularly with the new president. But what we emphasize here is that this commission should take a broad look at what happened from the point of point of detention in Afghanistan. What were the screening procedures used? How were decisions made to transfer all the way to the point of release and return home? And in order to do that, it should be a nonpartisan commission. This is a blue ribbon commission of very respected former military officers with intelligence background and otherwise, and international law experts and people from the medical and psychological community and others, so that these teams can actually paint a broad canvas here of what took place. And it should look backwards as to what went wrong and what needs to be changed and if there should be a criminal investigation. And then it should be prospective. It should look to what can we do in the future in order to make sure that we close this chapter in the past and have an effective way of dealing with any threats to our security in the future. So we know there are many worthy people out there. We hope that if this recommendation is taken up by the new administration, that they would look broadly and find the very best people they can.
This is Vince Warren. I just want to chime in on one aspect, and Carol, just to say that what we're calling for is actually not a Truth and Reconciliation Commission. That actually is a slightly different animal than what we're talking about. This is more of a commission of inquiry or a 9/11 type commission, and the key differences being that Truth and Reconciliation Commissions very often pop up when you have countries where there's a civil war, where there is one a powerful majority that's oppressing a minority or vice versa, and that you're looking for some aspect of the government hasn't talked about what's been happened, people have been disappeared and killed, and that you're looking for a commission that will tell the whole truth about the discussion and reconcile the country. Those circumstances are not really what we're talking about in the context of this matter, where people were essentially imported from around the world and detained for interrogation purposes. So there is no reconciliation aspect, national reconciliation aspect. And the other issue is that we are also calling very clearly for amnesty or immunity not to be an element of the commission that would impede the ability to move forward with criminal prosecution should the commission decide that that's an important avenue based on the evidence.
And as a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone phone now. Our next question comes from Indira Lakshmanan with Bloomberg News. Please go ahead.
Hi. I'm curious about how both Senator Obama, or President-elect Obama, and Senator McCain had talked about closing Guantanamo, but there's also been a lot of discussion about the complexity, how this is a complicated matter, and even Obama's own transition team has said that. And one of the issues of the complexity seems to be what to do with the detainees, that they often risk torture in their home countries and other home countries won't take them, or some of them might indeed pose a threat to the U.S. So what do you propose in those terms? What would you do with those detainees who, you know, may still be a danger to the U.S.?
This is Vince Warren. I want to respond to that by saying two things. One, I think the problem with the global approach to how we resolve Guantanamo has been, number one, that is, it's ignored information like the information in the report that's also important, and two, that it's a policy balancing act in which they people look at the problem cases or what are considered to be problem cases and then make a determination as to how the whole should be treated. And in fact, that's really what got us into this mess to begin with, that, you know, this has been a detention and interrogation program that has been aimed at a relatively few number of people, but it's brought in a whole range of people. So the way that we think about that and the way that the Obama administration should think about that is to look at the opposite way. We do know that of the roughly 230 people that are in Guantanamo, there are 50 people that have already been cleared for release, meaning that the government claims that they do not represent a threat to the United States interests. And these are people who are able to be released, at least with respect to how the Department of Defense looks at them, but the question is, where do they go? And that's a separate problem from people who are dangerousness. On that issue, where we've been talking at the Center for Constitutional Rights with members of foreign governments and talking about how their view might change under an Obama administration, and what we're hearing is that European countries would be more likely to entertain taking some of these men if two things happen. One is if the United States under an Obama administration engages in diplomatic discussions, which have been lacking with under the Bush administration. And number two, if the U.S. makes some overt efforts to talk about how what has happened has been a problem legally and a problem politically, and then begins to entertain taking some of the detainees themselves. And so, for example, the Uyghurs, the Chinese Muslims that a court recently ordered released, although that case is now on appeal, is a very good example of steps that the Obama campaign, or the Obama administration, can continue to do in order to facilitate the orderly release and safe release of the people in Guantanamo. With respect to the rest of them, the people that the roughly 23 people that the government has already charged, the government has a clear obligation, and those they have two options: they can try them, or they can release them. And that they need to try them, obviously, not in military commissions systems where the Constitution doesn't apply, and not with respect to very watered down war crimes charges like driving for somebody else. But if they have people that they feel that they have real war crimes charges, that they need to charge them in under the military code of justice, or they can send them to federal courts. Federal courts is a real preference, obviously, but there's no magic to this. This is really, we have very clear options. The problem is largely political, and the Obama team has the ability to overcome those political obstacles relatively quickly.
This is Laurel Fletcher. I just wanted to add to that. I think that the closing of Guantanamo, as you said, is necessary, but it's not going to be enough to resolve the damage that's been done to Guantanamo to U.S. image at home and abroad. And I don't think we should be distracted from that, that over 65% of the detainee population has been released. Closing Guantanamo isn't going to do anything for that population. And what our study points to is that many of those men should never have been detained, and they're suffering from a Guantanamo stigma, need to have a mechanism to clear their name. Closing Guantanamo doesn't offer that. A commission that would consider appropriate steps could do so for them, and we shouldn't lose sight of that. How the United States continues to treat those former detainees, we feel can have a real difference, symbolic difference, a political difference to how the United States is viewed by our allies and the Middle Eastern countries.
Our next question comes from Amy Herder with National Journal. Please go ahead.
Thank you. I just have two quick questions. In this commission, how many people do you envision being on this commission? Do you have a ballpark number that you could offer? And then my second question is regarding, I know that Representative Rush Holt from New Jersey has called upon Obama to make an executive order to end the use of torture and interrogations. Is that something that you guys support?
Eric Stover speaking. First, on the second, that's easy. we would absolutely support that. Torture, and not only torture, but any cruel inhuman treatment. And then we would also ask that they look into this question, the cumulative effect of various interrogation techniques, which on their own may not rise to the level of torture, but when done collectively over a period of time, certainly looks like it could. And I want to point out on that, too, just so we don't miss this point, one of the most devastating aspects that we learned from our interviews, in which lawyers who have worked with clients in Guantanamo, that is, detainees that are there, is the effect of solitary confinement, which could also often last up to 30 days and longer. And we know from studies elsewhere that this is a particularly damaging effect. Now, in terms of who would be the number of people appointed to the commission, I mean, we would leave that to the new administration. Sometimes these commissions operate with 10 or 12. You don't want too large a commission. But what's most important is, and that we recommend in the report, is that this be a commission that isn't just notables at the top and a lot of staff underneath. It needs to be broken down into task forces so that you have a task force that looks at screening procedures in other countries, in Afghanistan and elsewhere. How can you improve those screening procedures? And that would be experts with staff. Another task force would look specifically at questions of involvement of medical personnel. Another would look at, well, what has happened to these detainees once they've returned? Are they being reintegrated? The question of reintegration is not only in an interest of getting former detainees to go on and live normal lives. It's also a question of later security. You don't want, and we haven't seen this, but you don't want anyone to go back, or if they were not involved, get involved in any tax and security in the United States. So it's important that we are cognizant of that. So we would look at a commission that would develop a task force structure that would cover the wide spectrum of national security.
Our next question comes from Leslie Toy with the Daily Californian. Please go ahead.
Hello, yes. You say that there needs to be a mechanism for released detainees to clear their name. After your investigation, what would be your proposed action for that to most effectively happen?
This is Laurel Fletcher. Well, this is exactly what one of the task forces that Eric just referred to would consider. What would be, to think through, what would be the most appropriate mechanism to for that to happen? It would need to be one that was accessible to former detainees who are now spread in 30 countries. It would need to be relatively quick. The idea here is that those who have been released have been suffering under this stigma, and we need to take prompt action so that they can clear their names and show their communities and their families that they are that they pose no risk and should be fully accepted back into their communities.
And as a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star and one on your touch-tone phone. Our next question comes from Bridget Kuhn with JAMA Medical News. Please go ahead.
Hi. Just to follow up, I mean, can you be more specific about the physical and mental health problems that the former detainees that you interviewed have encountered? And is there any precedent out there for how the U.S. might help to see that these people have their health needs met?
Eric Stover speaking. What Laurel Fletcher mentioned earlier, some of the these are self-reported. We did not do use a PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder checklist, which is often done when interviewing people who have been abused or tortured. And what these were, we simply asked them what sort of problems, if any, are you experiencing, and we were quite surprised at the high level who actually, one even self-reported, I have PTSD, I've been diagnosed with PTSD. But primarily what we're seeing is that these former detainees are finding that Guantanamo remains with them and in their thoughts. They get irritable quickly. They talk about the family gatherings. They feel a sense of withdrawal. They persistent nightmares, and this irritability and outbursts of anger. Now, this is why we want a commission. We also need to, and not only a commission, but this would be something for other university centers, mental health centers, could look into. Do larger studies than our own and look into what are the problems. In terms of what could be done for them, interesting, about over 20 years ago, I published a book called The Breaking of Bodies and Minds, and it was about medical involvement in torture and psychiatric abuse in the Soviet Union and Latin America. I didn't think that here I would be over 25 years later and we'd be looking at the involvement of U.S. medical personnel. But that said, what happened in those countries, particularly in Latin America and Chile as a model, was that physicians came together and formed torture treatment centers in their countries. And in fact, here in the United States, when I published that book, there was no torture treatment centers. There are now 9 of them around the country because we've had so many immigrants who've come who've needed treatment from torture. So it, through professional associations in those countries, they can set up centers, make that available. What was striking in our interviews was that the vast majority, almost all of them, had not received any kind of assistance once they had returned home, whether it would be for economic assistance or for psychological counseling. One of the detainees, former detainees we interviewed, was held briefly after he returned to his country, and he asked to see a psychologist, and the government provided a psychologist, a woman, and he spent time talking to her for 2 or 3 weeks while he was in detention, and he said it was extremely helpful.
Hmm.
So that's we would recommend that in the countries where detainees are returning to, that there be a serious and systematic program to set up some kind of referral system as soon as these detainees arrive. That's the time to be talking to them and giving them assistance.
Okay, thank you.
And as a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone phone. Our next question comes from Charles Giddings with the Private Interest Group. Please go ahead, sir.
First of all, I'd just like to commend you for what sounds like very good work. My question is for Professor Fletcher. There's been discussion of professional accountability for doctors and psychologists. What about lawyers? Have you thought much about that?
Well, In every state in which attorneys are admitted to practice, there's a set of ethical rules, and state bars then have the authority to monitor and to sanction. So that system currently exists. Now, if your question is leading towards what about the involvement of attorneys in the detention and interrogation policies, I think that's exactly what a commission of inquiry should be looking into and investigating and recommending if the evidence indicates that there be criminal investigations opened all the way up the chain of command including lawyers that were involved.
Our next question comes from Indira Lakshmanan with Bloomberg News. Please go ahead.
Hi. It was just a follow-up to before. I know that your report really focuses on what needs to be done in addition to closing Guantanamo, but I'd like to hear from you whether you have a specific time frame that you're asking the Obama administration to close Guantanamo within X days. What do you think is realistic, and what are you asking for, specifically in terms of the closure of Guantanamo, before we even get to the part of what else needs to be done after that?
This is Vince Warren. The closing down Guantanamo can happen immediately. It can happen by executive order. It can happen by Congress defunding the operation. That is largely a political gesture, and it is largely a question of logistics after that. But I think the point that we're trying to make here is that other than saying that it needs to happen immediately or within a very short period of time once the logistics are worked out, is really a sufficient way to do it. It doesn't make sense to put an arbitrary time frame on it, but it also at some level doesn't make sense to say that it should be months and years rather than within the first 100 days. I think that's possible. I think it's doable, and I think that's what should happen. The other piece of this, though, is that it really is the only first part of the problem, because the question that you're left with is the one that we were talking about before. What do you do with the men, and what considerations do you take into account in terms of how you deal with them? And those are issues that are largely raised in this report, and we want the administration to be focused on those issues of how we deal with the effects of what has happened to the men in terms of working towards a safe release and a safe transfer of the men that are currently there.
This is Laurel Fletcher. Just a quick point to that. What the Obama administration could do immediately is to order a change of conditions of confinement in Guantanamo, in particular the use of solitary confinement, increasing exercise and access to natural light. As Eric mentioned earlier, the cumulative effects of detention and isolation could begin to be mitigated immediately.
This is Eric Stover, and I'd like to drive home the point. I made this several times, and that is for everyone to understand the effects of solitary confinement. During the Korean War, there were 36 airmen who were downed in Korea and held by the Chinese. One of those who was downed was by the name of Frank Schwabel, and he was held for months on end in solitary confinement and was eventually broken and made statements against the United States. But the important thing was that he noted after he was released and came home that within 2 weeks of solitary confinement, he had become so disoriented that he was hallucinating and having difficulties focusing, and he would obsess. And so what we want people to understand is that solitary confinement can amount to tremendous psychiatric problems long-term. It's in the medical literature. It's been well studied. And as Laurel said, a first step would be to ensure that whatever the detainees are who are there are kept in solitary confinement in these conditions, which go on for weeks and weeks and months on end.
Thank you.
And as a reminder, if anybody has any follow-up questions or final questions, please press star and one on your touch-tone phone at this time. And it appears we have no further questions at this time. I'd like to turn the call back over to Ms. McKinnon. Please go ahead.
Thanks again for joining today, everybody. If you're interested in talking with either of the report authors later, or if you need a copy of the report, please email me, Emma, at Emma, E-M-M-A, at Fenton, F as in Frank, E-N as in Nancy, T-O-N as in Nancy, .com, or call me at 202-302-6920. Thanks again for listening.